Now, we have a very special extra guest who's with us this week, and that's Dr. Matt Mountain. He's the director of the Space Telescope Science Institute, and he's been overseeing some of the groundbreaking work that's been done with the Hubble Space Telescope, as well as working on its successor, the James Webb Space Telescope. And he's with us to answer some of my questions, but also, more importantly, some of your questions this week, and to tell us a bit about the project. Hello, Matt.
Hello there, Chris.
First of all, can you tell us, what is the James Webb Space Telescope? What will it do?
Well, the James Webb Space Telescope is designed to be the successor to the Hubble Space Telescope, if you like, sort of Hubble 2.0. It's designed to work not, as the Hubble is, at optical wavelengths, but actually at infrared wavelengths, and it's much bigger than the Hubble. It's 6 meters across, 6.5 meters across, when the Hubble is only 2.4 meters across. So it's a very big telescope, which actually has to unfold on its way to orbit, roughly 4 times away from the distance from the moon to us, roughly 1 million kilometers away. And it's designed to look at the very first galaxies that ever formed in the universe's history, and we hope look at planets that are orbiting other stars and actually perhaps detect for the first time liquid water on those planets.
How was it conceived and how is it being constructed and how far along are you?
It was conceived by people at the Space Telescope Science Institute and the astronomical community in the US generally and now in Europe. As the Hubble started work, we began to understand what the limits of what we would be able to see with the Hubble. For example, we began to understand there was actually a whole class of galaxies, very early galaxies, that the Hubble could only barely see the sort of peaks of the iceberg. And there was the whole sort of hidden universe in the infrared hidden, which in fact we call the Dark Ages. It's the time from when the Big Bang and the background radiation and the sort of the irregularities in that radiation turned into galaxies, and then galaxies appeared. And the galaxies we see in the optical come from a certain point back in the Big Bang, roughly 13 billion years ago, but we know the Big Bang started 13.7 billion years earlier, and that period in between, this Dark Ages, was inaccessible, and we realized there was a very rich universe there, and we needed a telescope that was much bigger than the Hubble, that could operate in the infrared. And so it's been under construction for over 5 to 6 years now, and each of its mirrors are in a as part of a hexagonal segment. It's rather like a ground-based Keck telescope, which is a very large telescope in Mauna Kea in Hawaii. And this telescope is made of segmented mirrors that all have to operate as a single mirror. And so it's a very radical design, and it will be fly far beyond the moon at a point called Lagrange Point 2, which is a sort of stable point beyond the moon, where it will cool down to a ridiculously low temperature, roughly 40 degrees Kelvin, which I'm speaking from the U.S., is roughly minus 400 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's going to be very, very cold. And where we are right now is all the mirrors have been made. In fact, last week they were all completed. We have had some problems with cost overruns and some of the technical problems. We had to invent 10 new technologies to get this telescope going. But we're hoping to get this thing launched by 2018.
Yes, that's a bit of a sore point, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, if you look at the history of the James Webb Space Telescope, it was conceived in, the mid-90s. It was supposed to be flying by the mid-noughties. It was supposed to have a price tag of $500 million. That price tag is nearly $9 billion. So how optimistic are you that you will be seeing this thing returning data to Earth by that date?
Well, it was never actually supposed to. You're absolutely right. There's a lot of controversy going on right now. But it turns out that it was never supposed to be flown for $500 million. I mean, that was an estimate that people thought you perhaps could actually get something like this going if you launched it by sort of the late 90s. And by the time people started studying this, they realized that really something of this scale was going to cost between $3 to $4 billion if we could get it launched by sort of 2011. But delays and some of the technology challenges really have pushed the whole launch date out. And as you push the launch date out of these very, very complicated telescopes, the costs go up. And on top of that, we then started actually realizing we needed far more complicated instruments than had originally been put together. And you stack all that up, and yes, you're looking at a price tag probably to get this thing launched of at least $8 billion, which, of course, is an enormous amount of money. But the Hubble itself, to get it launched in today's dollars, cost roughly $10 billion. And so for something of the order of the cost to get the Hubble launched, you're getting a telescope which is almost four times larger and incredibly more powerful and in a much more stable orbit than where the Hubble is.
And I mean, just from one of the first things you said was this thing has got to unfold. That immediately sort of rings alarm bells that from a telescope, you're trying to position your mirrors to within a wavelength of light, I guess, a really good quality telescope. That's got to be a serious challenge.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, you know, when you first watch the movie, and you can go to one of our websites and you can watch this thing unfolding, people do actually turn to you and say, are you kidding? What they've forgotten, of course, is on the ground, for example, the 10-meter Keck telescope on Mauna Kea, it has lots of segmented mirrors, and it holds its figure perfectly in wind at all conditions of Mauna Kea, because what we use is a thing called a wavefront sensor, where we actually measure a star from the mirrors, and we measure the wavefront and then correct, because each of these mirrors has an individual adjustment on it. So we're constantly adjusting these mirrors to actually have them line up as a perfect single mirror. And that technology was, in fact, mastered back in the 80s by the Keck telescope on the ground.
Matt, let's take a look at some of the questions that people are sending in. If you'd like to submit a question for Dr. Matt Mountain to answer about his work in relation to imaging in space and what these kind of telescopes can do and will do, you can email chris@thenakedscientist.com or tweet @nakedscientist. I've got one here from Pekka Oyelinki, who's got on our Facebook page. Matt, she says, or he says, would the new telescope be able to see the moon lander or some other man-made debris on the moon?
Unfortunately not, but not because it wouldn't have the resolution. As I said before, this is a very cold telescope, and so it sits at this point, Lagrange 2, which is roughly four times the distance of the Moon, and the Moon is a very warm object for an infrared telescope. So in fact, we've designed this big sunshade, which is the size of a tennis court, precisely to block out the heat of the Sun, the Earth, and the Moon. So we can never look back at the Earth, the Moon, and certainly not the Sun. And so unfortunately, the Moon will remain inaccessible to us.
This one here from Nish Nayar, which is sort of related to the resolution, because obviously resolution is important, and we've sort of touched on this. What is the resolution or quality of the images that such telescopes like the James Webb can capture, and how much computer memory is this going to take?
Well, the telescope is, in fact, bigger than the Hubble Space Telescope. It's 6.5 meters, but it's designed to image in the infrared. And its images in the infrared will be as precise and as fine as the Hubble images are at the optical. So it will take as spectacular images as the Hubble does at infrared wavelengths. And so for the first time, we'll see the universe in the infrared with the clarity and the spectacular image quality of the Hubble Space Telescope. The sort of size of the cameras are actually very large. We've used the latest infrared array technology. And one of our prime cameras, called the near-infrared camera, well, not very imaginative, I'm afraid, will actually take instantaneous pictures, which are roughly 33 megapixels in size. So it'll be very large images.
And this is a very poignant question from Jeremy Baker, who says, what will NASA do with the equipment that's already been made if Congress cuts the program? Because obviously they're looking to make savings, and there is a danger that the James Webb might not progress on the grounds of there's no money available.
It is certainly one of the worries. I mean, the greatest tragedy here is that the mirrors, which are the most complicated part of the telescope, are in fact completed. And so we now have, at the Goddard Space Flight Center here, roughly 30 miles south of here, all 18 mirrors, each one as precise as the Hubble Space Telescope, in boxes waiting to actually be assembled into a telescope. And the instruments, many of which were built in Europe, and in fact the majority of the instruments actually come from European nations, and the UK, for example, is producing something called the mid-infrared imager, and it actually will be arriving here soon. So we will have these instruments also ready to go. And it's precisely because we have got so far with this that there's a lot of rethinking going on about whether this was the right decision to take by, it was the House. You know, in the U.S. system, there's the House and the Senate that decide on funding. The House first voted to actually not fund the James Webb Telescope. The Senate has yet to speak on the issue. And I think people are beginning to scratch their heads and think, hold on a minute, we've got all this hardware. You know, is this the right moment to actually stop the funding?
Let's hope not. Thanks for joining us, Matt. You stay there because we've got lots and lots of questions to put to you. You're listening to The Naked Scientist with Chris Smith, Dave Ansell and Emma Stoy. We're answering your science questions for you this week. And if you would like to join in and ask us something, or Dr. Matt Mountain, our guest this week, email chris@thenakedscientist.com. You can also tweet @nakedscientist if that floats your boat.
Bringing the facts to bear. The Naked Scientists.
It's The Naked Scientists with Chris Smith, Dave Ansell and with Emma Stoy.